Welcome to the RVC podcast, Veterinary Science on the Move. I am Matthias Kleins, and today we will try to see if bird flu should really concern you, or if it just puts poultry in jeopardy.
H5N1 avian influenza, also known as bird flu or fowl plague, is a highly virulent viral disease that is endemic in many wild bird populations and causes sporadic disease outbreaks in poultry. Recently, it has received increasing public attention as about 250 human cases of H5N1 have raised fears that the zoonotic potential of the disease could have wider implications on animal and human health. Dirk Pfeiffer, Professor of Veterinary Epidemiology at the RBC, together with his co-workers, has recently investigated factors that influence the occurrence of disease outbreaks and the spread of disease in affected areas in Southeast Asia. Dirk, since the first fatal cases of H5N1 avian influenza have been confirmed in humans, scientists have tried to understand how the virus might be changing to allow this animal disease to develop zoonotic potential. As most human cases have occurred in the course of outbreaks of H5N1 in poultry, and H5N1 is endemic, or seems to be endemic in wild birds in many countries, the other big question to ask, of course, is which factors facilitate epidemic outbreaks in poultry? With your collaborators, you have recently looked at some of those factors, especially in the regions of Southeast Asia affected by H5N1. Could you tell our listeners what your major observations were?
Yes, I mean, in fact, I would challenge you when you're saying that it is endemic in wild birds. I don't think we can actually say that. We don't know that. I mean, they've as an example, they've sampled, I think, 50,000 wild birds across the whole of Europe last year and didn't find a single bird infected with H5N1 HPAI virus. So, I mean, it's very hard to find. So, the same in Africa. I mean, FAO has sampled birds in Africa and can't find it. I mean, it is quite common in some parts of Asia. China, although I couldn't tell you now where it does occur in China. You see, it does occur, or has occurred, I should say, in Vietnam. At the moment, it's not there, although there has been a recent outbreak in some ducks in the south of the country. And there is probably quite a considerable amount of infection in Indonesia. So at the moment, I would actually say, when you look around the world, the only country where there's a significant level of infection is probably in Indonesia. Now, whether that's wild birds or domestic poultry, I don't know, because in the end, the only thing you can realistically measure is infection in domestic poultry. And the thing about that, again, is all you will see is chickens dying, okay? Ducks do not necessarily die from the disease,
That's one of the interesting things I saw as well, that just based on clinical symptoms, the surveillance seems to be difficult. You have to actually test for the presence of the virus in certain species as well.
Exactly. And I mean, you have to capture them, and then you have to... I mean, you take tracheal swabs, you take cloacal swabs, and hopefully you find the infection. But as I say, where that was done in wild birds, it didn't actually produce the results that we wanted, which may mean that it isn't that common. I mean, I've done some work also in Hong Kong where it's a different situation in that the public is very concerned about the disease. So the government does everything that they can do. Every dead bird that people find, the public finds, they will actually look and examine them in the lab. And they've found some infection, I've forgotten what the numbers were, but relatively small numbers. This year, for example, in various resident wild bird species, okay? But still, I mean, then some people can say, oh, it's endemic in resident wild birds. You can't really say that because, as I say, when you look more closely, you look at larger numbers and sample live birds, you don't see much infection.
So some of the measures which European countries have been taking, especially over the last two migratory periods in the winter, where they shut off all domestic poultry from potential interactions with wild birds, they were probably just arbitrary and precautions which were unnecessary.
I mean, we actually did a risk assessment for the European Commission, and I chaired that group. And so not that I was the guy who did the smart things. I had the privilege to work with 15, 20 experts from around Europe to look at this particular question, and our conclusion was that the risk all in all is actually not very high. Mm-hmm. Now, it's probably higher for free-range bird than it is for birds which are in commercial poultry units shut behind doors. But nevertheless, though, when you think about the actual events that have to occur, you see, like there have to be the domestic birds have to be obviously somewhere on pasture, and then you have to have wild birds come close to them. They need to be, but that's usually indirect contact with feces, and the feces have to be infected, i.e. the wild bird has to be infected. So there's so many events in between where you could argue, actually, it's not a huge risk, but probably sufficient of a risk
to justify the measures.
To justify in some countries, okay, not everywhere. And I guess I would say in Germany, because they did find quite, in fact, it was bird deaths which they reported last year. But with that, again, one should differentiate and not say every free-range or outdoor poultry production should be put indoors. It's really it's a higher risk if you are close to a wetland area. Okay, that's a key issue to consider. I mean, migratory birds might bring it in. Then you need to have the interface with a domestic poultry. Now, if somebody has outdoor poultry production in the vicinity of a wetland area, obviously the chances of an infected migratory bird coming into contact with those free-range chickens is higher.
So that's probably also the reason why, I think at least in recent times, there have been a lot of reports at least of H5N1 in wild birds in southeastern Europe as well, right? In, for example, some of the accession states of the European Union, Bulgaria, Romania.
We don't really know what's going on there, but you could argue the Black Sea being there, etc. So there's this, and there are migratory birth paths, and that they might have brought it in, but then it's maybe the type of chicken production that we have there. And that's actually another question. I mean, how important are commercial producers and how important are backyard producers for maintaining the infection? And we don't know. They're like you go to Asia, people say, oh, it's the backyard farmers. Whereas the commercial producers with 50,000 chickens or 30,000 chickens in a shed, they have good biosecurity and therefore they don't pose a risk.
But still, they are the people who probably cause transport of either live birds or meat products throughout the world. And as you say, there doesn't seem to be a huge endemic risk of H5N1 in the wild populations. Where does it come from? Is trafficking a big...
There is a big debate about why we don't have an epidemic in Africa, you see, because people last year predicted that. They said, oh, it's gone up with the wild birds to the Arctic, to the breeding grounds, and then when they move down during winter, they will take the infection into Africa. And it happened. And there was an outbreak in Nigeria, and it wasn't clear where that came from. I don't think we are 100% certain what it was, but it seems to have been day-old chickens imported from China. Now, that's global movement of
birds,
okay? Now, or you take the story that everybody knows about, the Bernard Matthews, issue, where it might have been meat, it's more likely to have been movement of chickens or product
than a wild bird. You still, however, have apparently looked at some of the socioeconomic factors in Southeast Asia which actually caused the outbreak there, independently whether that might be caused by trafficking of birds or meat products based on commerce beforehand or from wild populations. And it seems to be a little bit the way how birds are kept, which probably determine whether an outbreak might occur or not. Is that right?
When people said last year, I talked to them, they said last year, oh, we're going to have an epidemic in Africa. I said, I mean, I don't actually believe that. I mean, because, and the reason was the production system that we have in Asia, in Southeast Asia in particular, is different from what you have in Africa. And it's the sort of interface where you have a rice paddy field, people keep ducks for meat. They keep chickens, so it's that combination of different species where you could have the odd wild bird come in, bring infection, and then bring in the infection. Then you have the ducks which are being in contact with other domestic ducks from the same village. Then there's other things like fish ponds that people have, so they keep the ducks on the fish pond, and the feces, the virus could survive in the feces in the duck pond and then could infect other species that use that same pond. There's even a bit of a trade with poultry manure going on amongst backyard farmers. So I think that system is very...
And it's conducive,
obviously. Yeah, yes, and it's very different from what you have in Africa and also, of course, Europe. So
it seems to be a very specific pattern of how animals are kept in Southeast Asia rather than just crowding, for example, which, of course, could be another reason why an epidemic occurs, and that would be of particular interest to commercial poultry farming in the European Union, where crowding, of course, does occur, but under completely different, probably hygienic standards.
Yeah, I think there's an issue there in that, obviously, fundamentally, if you increase the density of birds, there's more of a chance of transmission. Once the infection gets in, there's more chance of transmission amongst those birds. And that has actually had devastating effects in the Netherlands when they had the outbreak a couple of years ago there, and it's spread very quickly between poultry farms because they were so close together. I think there's the problem is probably that the increase in these spread opportunities that has to be balanced against the improved biosecurity, it doesn't quite match. Again, it's all, but take the Matthews, such a high density of turkeys. Turkeys are highly susceptible. They die quickly. Once you've got it in there, it just explodes. There's not much you can do.
But it was actually possible to contain that.
It was.
A smaller number of infected birds would have caused a proper pandemic, also with probably health hazards to humans in East Asia.
This is a tricky one because, see, the Vietnamese government, for example, wanted to sort of prohibit small-scale production of chickens, and even backyard chickens in some areas. And it was like people blame them for the problem. Okay, and completely ignore the commercial producers. Mm-hmm. We've since come to the conclusion that we need to be a bit cautious with that. Firstly, I mean, chickens are very important to feed the poor people around the world. And to go in there with such a simplistic thing and say, oh, we'll get rid of them, that's just unrealistic. And then, while I think they do play a role because of trade issues, marketing issues, and moving chickens around, they're going to wet markets. In wet markets, there could be infected chicken, and that infects another one. Somebody takes it home to the next village. So there's a good mechanism for spreading that. But I think we need to be a bit careful, though, with whether we emphasize that as being the main cause for the disease in those countries, and then completely ignore the commercial companies. It becomes a socioeconomic problem.
Of course. You could step in all sorts of traps if you make simple conclusions at that point.
You could.
From a human health point of view, are there any clues which you have from your research which you could share with us? Because apparently infectious dose seems to be quite important. Normally the susceptibility of humans to H5N9 of the avian type seems to be low, but if you are exposed to large amounts of pathogen, potentially...
H5N1, you mean?
What did I say?
Nine.
Okay, sorry, I was talking about H5N1, yes, I'm sorry. But that seems to be the critical point. So probably, again, animal husbandry plays a role in actually posing the threat to humans.
I think that's a very, very good point. And that's where you come back to Vietnam, where then people, it's a livelihood of these. They have the pigs, they have the chickens, they have the ducks, and it's all a very close contact there. So there's opportunity for transmission. If you then take a wet market, live chickens there, okay? Ducks, and some of them might be infected.
Scary scenario.
Right now. It's a scary scenario, isn't it? You can sort of imagine the virus floating around. So there's a, but nevertheless, though, when you consider all that, we actually haven't had that many cases. Now, what we should, when we say that, we also should keep in mind, obviously, what we see are the cases that get sick, okay?
Mm.
And particularly the fatal ones. So there's probably a little bit of under-reporting going on. So in terms of how many people have been exposed and maybe got infected but didn't develop clinical disease, we can only speculate on
probably
that.
The mortality rates might be much lower than reported as well, because we only know of a couple of confirmed infected cases, and apparently more than 50% of those seem to die, but we don't know. And another interesting aspect I was wondering about is that, okay, you seem to say that despite all the work which has been done on avian influenza, you sometimes find it hard to make really, really firm conclusions. But it seems to be a disease which has been quite well studied over the last couple of years, and it's another emerging zoonosis potentially. So as we had a lot of important animal diseases with a potential impact on human health over the last decade maybe, could you look at some of the patterns which seem to be involved in the emergence of avian influenza and now try to extrapolate models which in the future will allow us to predict the spread of disease from animals to man or even the emergence of new diseases?
I mean, I think there is an assumption here which is, I think, something that we as veterinarians have to deal with, and that is that there's the role of the media in that context, okay, which tends to pick up stories that...
That's sell.
Okay, and I would say that, and I just have to be careful here with BSE, new variant CJD, when you think about the amount of money that's being spent and that it has cost economies worldwide and the amount of suffering that was caused. Now, I'm not saying that that we should disregard the suffering. But nevertheless, though, there's an issue with the balance. And same with avian influenza, same similar story. When you think about the number of people that actually have been affected, while there is obviously the potential risk of a pandemic, potential, but on the other hand, the amount of money that's been spent on it and the way how it has affected people in terms of what they might eat or don't eat and where they travel and where they don't travel and so on, yeah, I do wonder whether the balance is right there. Okay, I'm not saying we should ignore it, but I think we need to be a bit more balanced in the way how we deal with these risks. Again, and I'm not saying that we will not have a pandemic. I'd still say the risk is fortunately fairly low. But then to go back to 1918 and compare the situation nowadays with the situation in 1918, the way how the susceptibility that people might have towards that sort of disease and so on is tricky. I mean, I think there are things to be learned, and they are that we need to have the science in place. Now, with avian influenza, we are reacting, okay? We're not proactive. We are reacting. And it's always about doing something. We don't have the time to do the research, okay? Which is where your point is.
You're
right.
We're chasing the tail.
And some of these things, like to understand how the disease behaves in migratory birds, is a longer-term research project. I can't just produce a result in 6 months' time.
Because someone suddenly noticed the importance of the issue.
But to me, it's where we as veterinarians have to be, and also scientists have to be careful, because there is society that wants answers. They're informed by various sources, one of them being the media. And then there's government that needs to take action to deal with it, with the demands from society, from the electorate, and so on. And we are there to bring in the science. And that makes it quite difficult, actually. And I have to say, I've worked on BSE, I work on Scrapie, and I work on avian influenza, because that's where the money is.
That's where the money is, and you have to keep
And that's also where there's a need is. And I hope that I try to bring some balance into it. Just one example, and that really is something I remember. When I was in Singapore last year advising them on avian influenza, there was an article in the newspaper about Indonesia, and the headline was, "We've had tsunamis, we've had earthquakes, why should we care about bird flu?" Because bird flu is a disease that we Europeans, because of 1918 situation,
and we're afraid of.
We're afraid of, yeah. You see. And we then try to then, or we are basically saying, oh, somebody in a village in Indonesia where children are starving, they have Newcastle disease coming through the bird flock anyway where birds die, will have different priorities. They should change their life just to reduce the risk of a bird flu pandemic, which is still hypothetical for us. I think that's what we need to keep in mind.
That we advise people who have a different circumstance in their life.
Well, the balance, you see. Yeah. I mean, the proportionality of the response of the different issues. And it's the same. I think you could probably use similar aspects on farmers in the UK. I mean, it's easier to look at Indonesia and say, just sort of surviving, they have the different species, and that system has evolved over a long, long time. And bird flu is only one aspect of the risks that they have to live with. As this headline said, tsunamis, earthquakes, and they're real issues because they happen there and then and now. Whereas there's a hypothetical question, and then somebody says, "In you should improve your biosecurity, you shouldn't move your chickens around anymore, you shouldn't do this, then the other."
Well, I hope that a couple of journalists are going to be listening to this podcast and listen to your very, very balanced view on the issue. But probably it would be utopian to expect them to change their headlines in the next couple of
probably
years.
Would be, yes.
After all, they're under commercial pressures as well, I suppose. But thank you very much for giving us this insight in your work, and thanks for taking part.
It was a pleasure.
Well, that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show, and please check our webpage again next week when we will be talking about the causes of laminitis in horses. In the meantime, if you have any feedback or suggestions, please send it to podcast@rvc.ac.uk. Goodbye.